Blog Talk Radio.
Good evening, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Ted Santos, and I am your co-host of The Creative Alchemist, where we bring creativity and transformation. And today, surely, we will be talking about transformation. I'm your co-host. We are the show that comes to you every Thursday at 7, and we talk about business. We talk about your business needs. We talk about it from perspectives that may or may not involve COVID, creating new plans for a new year, transferable skills, your health, leadership. And today we will have a very, very specific focus on leadership. But before we introduce our guest, which is what we have every week, I'd like to introduce my co-host, Lori. Let them know you're here.
Hi, I'm Lori Miller, LGC Interior Design. And we, like Ted said, we talk about all things related to business. So personal, professional, being an entrepreneur, burnout. And tonight's guest, I'm going to let her introduce herself, is very special. And for somehow she helps you avoid burnout. So, Desi, please introduce yourself, and thank you for being with us tonight.
Thank you very much for having me, and I am blessed and honored to be in the show. And thank you for giving me opportunity to spread my message out in today's world. As high achievers, as you know, we are today, because in a time of change and in multicultural society that we work, burnout is a kind of process that is not overnight coming up. As high achievers and different kind of mindsets leaders have or organizations of or our relationships with people, that indicate very much in a burnout. So the mindset is the biggest issues, and the cultures that they bring within. So
Desi, before you go, you said mindset and culture is very important. So can we kind of take a step back? So usually when people have an accent, it's usually an indication they speak another language and most likely come from another culture. So can you tell us where are you from? Where were you born? I assume with your accent, you were not born in the U.S. so where are you from?
Yes, of course. God bless America, that bring all the nations together to work in a common sense. I am from Albania. I grew up in communism country, in totalitarianism, and which unfortunately lasts for over 50 years. And because we was not a communist, we go under a lot of hardship as a family. However, after communism finished, I finished law school. I worked in government as a lawyer and attorney. And recently, after that, then one guy from Brooklyn come to my office in Tirana City Hall. And then I end up in Brooklyn, New York. And that's that, 22 years ago, I introduced a friend of mine, Jenny, to Columbia University. And from that day on, for 17 years, I served to high-performance culture.
Well, very interesting. So let me ask you, is there so you live in a country that embraced communism, correct?
Correct.
And so is there lots of people in the U.S. talk about communism, Marxism. Is there a big difference between a communist country like Albania and a capitalist country like the U.S. culturally? Is there a big difference in culture?
Yes, indeed. It's a big difference. It's because the different cultures depend from what country you are. You normally generate a different kind of cultures. Being in a communist country like Albania, that didn't go through the industrial revolution, from feudalism to the communism, and didn't go like the rest of Europe or America, then closed the doors of Albania, then it was a closed mindset. So
okay.
The culture style there is different from United States. And we have a purpose, we have learning and result, and but a different kind of working ethics and a different way of looking at things and resolving at things.
Interesting. Okay. All right. So you were an attorney. Is it difficult for women to become professionals in Albania? Is it more difficult there than it is in the U.S., or is it about the same?
Oh, it's a day and night. It's day and night. It's, to be in United States an attorney is just like everybody else. You can choose any time
okay.
to be, right? In Albania, it
right.
was a luxury. I mean, it was a chosen. And especially for women, you need to fight as a man in order for you to survive and thrive. So I remember that when I finished the high school, and they don't let me to go to school, of course, my family was not right to have a school, to get married, or to get a job, because we was not counted.
Okay.
So in that case, we was rejected every single way we go. Then I couldn't take it no for answer. So I fight and I learn at night, because if after 10 o'clock at night, lights was on in the house, the next day you are in a jail, because they think that you hear American voice of the news and radio, so you are capitalist. So they put you
wow.
in jail. So
no kidding. Case, so you know, part of what we're talking about today is
yeah.
how has leadership changed in the 21st century?
Yeah.
And you know, there, I would assume that there is even is a difference in leadership style. So
yes.
Before I go on with Lori and I go on with questions, if anyone would like to call in and ask Desi questions about leadership, the phone number is 516-387-1640. That's 516-387-1640. So I guess then if we I'll assume that there's a difference in leadership in Albania, in a totalitarian country, and the difference between what you see in the United States. So it sounds like for sure you were a high performer, right? You refused to take no for an answer, and you were one of the few women who was allowed to have a career. You were an attorney.
Yeah.
So that's some level of leadership also. So how did you make the leap from being an attorney to training and developing people to be leaders? I mean, that's, I don't mean to throw so much at you, but you said in Albania, it's more of a closed mindset. And I assume, are you familiar with Carol Dweck's work, Growth Mindset and Closed Mindset? Are you familiar
yes.
with her work?
I study that a lot from
okay.
Columbia University Business School and from Nevada University.
Okay, perfect. So you came from a country that had more of the closed mindset, and apparently you had a growth mindset, and you took some risks, and you pushed forward, and you were an attorney. But now
yeah.
you are training and developing people in leadership. So what was that journey? How did you make that transition from attorney to training people in leadership?
Well, it's a journey, right? For every one of us where we are today. It's a journey that
right.
that high achievers ask questions in life. And that's the makes the difference in people. When you ask questions to yourself and ask more of yourself to be developed, then you go from one stage to another. So before I became to be a consultant, business consultant and transformational coach, I worked for Columbia University at Human Resource after I come in United States. And I work with international group of people and intellectuals. Okay. And there I learn the different cultures of people to come from, because the scientists that I work with are from all over the world, right?
Okay.
So there I saw the differences in approach of solutions of the problems come in a business. And one day, that kind of closed mindset and mediocre that I come from that culture, because don't forget, I was for Albania high achiever, and I was higher that that mediocre over there. But if I compare myself with a free world like United States, I have many blind spots as a person. And that is blind spots of executives and blind spot of high achievers can be result in the burnout. And
okay.
I am
right.
one of them, right?
So you help people avoid burnout, and one reason you're good at that is because you've experienced burnout yourself. Is that what you're saying?
Yes, indeed. Yes.
Okay.
And I actually experienced the burnout in a most extreme way, because I was used to with the structure work and doing two people job, three people job, no problem. The thing is that because I grew up in a such a close environment, I have many blind spots. And I find out that when in personal relationships that linked me to my childhood, when I discovered. So the burnout is a process, and is mostly is a mindset, and of course the habits people have in everyday life and what processes they put it in. So by seeing that in a big picture is that, and I studied that for last 3-4 years in a deep level. And that is how I discover that the blind spots that we have as executives or as high achievers, because we try to not be a mediocre, right? So we try to see broader than what everyday life,
right?
So in that case, I see that I have many blind spots, which in a moment I try to blame and complain others for my outcomes. Yes, and living in that world, because sometimes when you are a mediocre or closed mindset is that you see things in one way and you don't see the other side of the person in a certain, because all of us, we have a different blind spot. I have in this field,
right.
You have another field.
Let me ask you something. Do you think people's blind spots are what can cause failure? Do you think blind spots cause failure?
Yes, indeed, sir. Yes, absolutely, yes. And I see that because I connect the dots, yes? And I see that in many executives that I met through my career, that because of them blind spot, they don't see the other person's perspective or the other version of reality. And we perceive things wrongly many times. And we judge people after that, and we make decisions based on that.
So then that means blind spots can cause you to miss opportunities.
Yes, indeed.
You're also saying that it can cause failure. How do you come out of failures? How do you come out of a failure if it's caused by a blind spot?
Well, because I ask questions, right? And I am the person who go deep, because my background is a lawyer, right? A lawyer's job is to go deep to the case and to find the solution of the problem, right? So my analytical tools, my analytical nature – lead me that I want to ask a question to myself. What really make me to be so blind to the opportunities, to the yellow alerts that life bring, and the feedbacks or criticism that you need to pay attention to and not to ignore? Because when we ignore the criticism from our coworkers or husband or son or boss, then, and to ask a question, why Ted or Lori is asking me this question or is responding to me that way? Normally, people in 20th century think my way or highway. That is not the way to be, and especially in 21st century, right?
Well, so, you know, wait, you bring up something important, and it's part of the reason I was asking you about the culture of Albania. So in a totalitarian society, it can be very much my way or the highway.
Yes.
And when you look at business in the United States in the past, that's the way corporations were run. They called it command and control, which meant it was my way or the highway, and that's it. So, sorry, I have some fire trucks here. In the 21st century, what do you think has to change or transform in leadership? Because in the past, corporations in the U.S., were very much like Albanian leadership, totalitarian, command and control. So what do you think has to happen in the 21st century to avoid the problems of totalitarian command and control corporate culture?
Yes, indeed. Harvard University and Columbia University have a distinguished and thoroughly research about that. And one research at Harvard University Business Review is that they analyze, which I studied that in Nevada University, and they analyze how in corporations and in multicultural corporations to analyze the culture style, let's say how in each country of the world, and how we can implement that in a multicultural style. Meaning, if you are in Africa, you are more caring, or Asia, you have more purpose, or Australia, you have more enjoyment, or results, you have Eastern Europe, and authority is more of North America, or Western Europe is more safety. So it's a mixture of everything. And the result of that shows that because Columbia University is high performance culture, is they go through this kind of analysis, and they make that to work, and it became a democratic leadership. And as you see in today's world, and I am checking Forbes here in New York, and I see from Vistage, because I go every day, I see how the leadership is changing through the changes we are going today. And the pandemic actually give a boost to that democratic leadership, which is now CEOs go to connect to each other before, I know that stuff, and this is my order, and this is finished. Now they are cooperating with each other, CEOs and CFOs and manager to manager, to cooperate and to see what I don't know, you know, what I know, you don't know, so we can cooperate and to make that works as a family or as a organization or as a city or at large.
So wait, now this is important. So sounds like you're saying two things. One is corporations are more global now. And even if you're in New York, a corporation could have employees from all over the world, Asia, the U.S., Eastern Europe, Western Europe, South America, Australia. They can come from everywhere. So just using one style of leadership, a command and control, may cause problems in your company because people are accustomed to different styles of leadership. So you're saying that through Harvard and Columbia, they found that a more collaborative style of leadership helps a multicultural organization. You know, whether everyone from all over the world works in one office in New York, or your office or your company has offices around the world.
It doesn't matter where you are.
That's one thing that I hear you saying. And the other thing is that leaders are also learning to collaborate with other leaders. So we live in an information age, right? So you talked earlier about the industrial age. Now we are in an age of information where collaboration is even more important, because I know something that you don't know. You know something I don't know. Lori knows something that neither of us knows. And when we put all that together, it's like putting a puzzle together. And if we only dealt with one person's knowledge, the leader, then we have kind of the closed mindset, and we're limited to what the leader knows. So collaboration has become even more important, especially in a global organization in an information age. So I know I said a lot, but you know, global employees from all over the world. The other is the information age and sharing your information. So a commanding control style of leadership ultimately would cause you to squander, and it's easier to fail.
Yes, indeed.
In an environment where people are cooperating. Is that what you're saying? Am I hearing you correctly?
Yes, because we live in a digital world today, and to embrace the change is a must for every leader. And some leaders I met through the internet, of course, here, we are connected now with all over the world. And many leaders, what I hear is they are not willing to make that change in transformation, because you need blockchain to include in, you need internet security, you need this, you need that, you need to go online, the leaders now, and to speak in a video, and to connect with the audience, and to be more visible in internet, and that digital world that takes a lot of effort to learn something new, right? And of course, the small business, they don't have that capability to purchase this kind of upgraded technology. And that is a mixture of resources and the mindset of the leaders that cannot go to the next step of evolution, and then to make the company to fail. And of course, that's what is one part of it. And the other part is the company culture that they improve inside. It's a company of performance, or it's what strategy they have, and what value they have in the core of the company, because a different kind of industry have a different kind of vision and mission with that. That's why it's a complex issue. But course, as a consultant, I take one thing at a time, and I analyze where is the broken chain in that strategy, or in that mission, or in that talent optimization, because I work in human resource for 17 years, right? I work with hire people.
Right. Very good. So it sounds like the growth mindset is not only important for leaders, it's important for everyone in the company.
Everyone.
So the other thing that's important for companies, and leaders spend sometimes two full days working on strategy, because strategy is important.
Yes.
What do you think is more important, mindset or strategy?
Well, I study that very much, and it's amazing, because some people think that a strategy is more important, or some other people can think that the mindset of the leader is very important. No, both of them very important, equal important.
Okay.
Because without strategy, you cannot work. And without that growth mindset, you cannot. So you need both of them to achieve that change, necessary change that you need to go through this evolution we are in.
Okay. So what do you think are going to be some of the biggest changes leadership will face in the 21st century?
Yes, because the 21st century leadership is to be inclusive. Inclusiveness is going to make a huge change in the leadership. And how the leaders before, they were delegating and things like that. The leaders, I have honor to meet Professor Isidore Edelman 22 years ago at Columbia University. Rest in peace, he passed away. He is the leader. He was 84 when he died playing tennis. But the wisdom and the leadership that he show every day in his life with authenticity strive me and drive me to be a better person. Because he has he speaks with the president of Colombia and the cleaner of the floor in the same way. Everybody who comes to his office for help or for problem or for anything come out with a solution. That leadership of 21st century means to be inclusive and to be authentic with everyone in the same way. Because human nature is, you know, we call that human condition, right? And we don't know what we don't know. The thing is that to come to that point of awareness as leaders and to see our blind spots, where we, and the feedback of your employees, because one leader, they can make an orders, yes, and you can have people who help you to execute that order. The thing is that you have no connection with a worker who is doing that job. So my mentor and director, Dr. Honig, he not just take orders, of course, he has to do, because he cannot do himself everything, right? And that he go over the floor to see everybody is okay. And if anything problem you have as an employee, and then what I see in high performance, because startup, we start in my department, I used to work in the Department of Systems Biology, the leadership style that is used is a dual leadership, meaning not one person as a leader, but two people. Because two heads are better than one. And that is democratic leadership. And that you approach and you, one is good on that, one is that, and then you split the responsibility, you split that, and then a high performance happen. No other way around. And with a pleasure, because become a part of everybody, from the simple worker to the top, everybody is in a blood, in a vein, what is good for the department. Everyone knows what he's going to do and how he's going to do and why for. So it's the leader's job to develop that kind of relationship with employees. So they are engaged. And when the layout are, and today, the people are frustrated and anxiety and depression because people lose the job, right?
Right,
In high performance culture, one big company here in New York, what did is they didn't lay off no one person. What they did, they put 20% or 10% of every single body from the CEO down, them salary down, in order to survive as a company. So that is the mindset of 21st century, that we can make this change and to make the investment we need in technology to come to the other side of the hurdle.
Well, interesting you say that. So it sounds very much like you're describing a growth mindset. So what do you think are the most promising unexplored opportunities for growth in business as a leader or just in business in general?
You see, from my own experience, I am one person, one woman, but from my own experience is to have the balance of emotional intelligence in a time of crisis is a must for a leader.
All right. So can you just quickly, we're going to have to do this in two ways. So tell everyone what emotional intelligence is, how do you build it, and then let's come back to the unexploited opportunities for growth. So what is emotional intelligence?
Yes, emotional intelligence is that when you have dispute or failure or something that doesn't go the way you think supposed to go, right?
Right.
You're
talking about life in general. That happens for all of us, right?
At some point,
things don't go the way you want, right?
Exactly. So that is for everyone. It's not just for leaders, right? Because first you have to be a self-leader, then you can lead somebody, right? If you are not self-leader, you don't have self-leadership, that you are not. So you cannot lead anyone, right?
Can't you say we're all the CEO of our own lives, right?
Yes, so we are.
Yes, that would mean you're a self-leader. Go ahead.
Yes.
Sorry, keep going.
Yes. And so to have that courage and to come inside yourself, and the way I build my emotional intelligence is, and to not go to fight and flight moods all the time, right? Because the life itself is a run, right? You have to run to do that, you have to do this, that. And then our brain, our subconscious mind, sometimes don't take that. It's a lot of information, what we do is that to come to the center, and the self-awareness is the biggest gift someone can give to themselves. Because when you come to be a self-aware, do you notice most of us all day, we tend to do, I'm going to wash the dishes, I'm going to do this, I'm going to write this book, I'm going to talk this, many things, right? And then that is fight and flight mode. And in end of the day, you go to the bed and you are burnt out. You don't want to talk to anybody because you are dead tired, right? Now that I am a coach, of course, and I am a consultant, three times a day during the day, I stop and I see myself in a picture, what I did until now. Because most of us, all the time, we are not all the time aware of what we are doing, what we are thinking, how we are doing things. And
it's sort of like a robot. It's almost like a machine, right? Like a robot. You just keep going.
I was the one robot. I was working machine. It was Desi. Yes. And that's why I got burned out, right? And the funny part is that high achievers, we love to do things, right? And then we say yes to everybody. And in the end, you forget your life. You forget to take care of yourself first.
So part of emotional intelligence is being able to relate. It's being able to relate to people even in the face of conflict, to not be upset. So be aware of how you respond to people, correct?
And also to be aware before you respond to someone, you need to ask a question to yourself. First, you need to breathe because you need oxygen in your brain, and to relieve you from that fight and flight mood. And then to ask yourself a question, should I answer that now? Why am I thinking that way? Does that person, because to be a good listener is to see why Ted is talking that way.
Mm.
And when we come to that perspective to see yourself, other person's shoes, then you see the different perspectives and you make a better decisions by seeing different perspectives. And
interesting.
That,
so you have to become like Socrates and ask questions. The question can be more important than the answer sometimes.
Yes, indeed. And by asking questions, you not just relieve the stress out, and you also, the other person, when you ask a question with curiosity, not to put people down, you don't know and I know, right? But questions from their perspective, they are feeling hurt, and they may come down from them fight and flight mood too. So you can calm down the situation by asking questions with empathy.
So understanding the other person, and that usually takes more effort than some people are willing to invest, right? So you have to ask questions if you want to understand the other person, especially if you want to stand in their shoes. So that's a good way to go about it. Understood. So that's more of emotional intelligence development. So what we were talking about before we took a slight detour, we were talking about promising unexplored opportunities for growth. So you were talking about how emotional intelligence could affect the opportunities for growth. Is that what you were relating here?
Yes,
okay.
Because when we are in fight and flight mood, we don't see things. We are not aware of many things, and things can go like that. And opportunities missed. I missed many opportunities because I didn't have that emotional intelligence before.
Okay. Okay. So, Lori, for everyone who doesn't know, you do interior design.
Right.
But you also have another job where you work with people who probably are heavily embedded in, at least in the fight mode, maybe flight when the police arrive. You work at Rikers Island and you do some psychological intake. You've had a practice in therapy. So it sounds like the sort of things that you do with people also, helping them deal with fight and flight.
I do. I just, an interesting question. I'm just wondering if Desi thinks that emotional intelligence can be taught.
Yes. Yes, it can. I learned that.
Interesting.
Yes.
Okay.
Emotional intelligence is a learning skill.
Okay.
Well, there's an interesting relationship between Lori and Desi. Desi is the attorney who gets them locked up, and then when they get locked up, Lori, you do the psychological evaluation. You all are related somehow.
And Desi's probably also a better business person than I felt, so...
That's your past life, Desi. That's you're no longer practicing law, correct?
No longer. I practice now consulting, business consulting, and a transformational coach for sure. I help burnout executives, of course. And
let me ask you. Let me ask you about your business. So, how do you get new business? Like, how do you promote yourself or see yourself from a marketing strategy? I would assume, even though lots of people in prison could use emotional intelligence training, that's probably not, you don't go there to find new clients, I assume. So what's your marketing strategy? How do you do that?
You see, in the digital world we live today, many people, they see you as you are a transformational coach and you are a business consultant, and they see you. Of course, they check you up. And I am bombarded with the different kind of methodologies of marketing every day. The thing is that every single person of us, we have a disposite or the way of using our intellect and our talent, yes? So as entrepreneur, as a woman, to be authentic with myself first and to not get to take advantage from others, because everybody wants to sell something, right? And I found that authentic way to market myself, because my friend in Brooklyn, Joe, he's absolutely high performer, and I encourage everyone connect with him if they wanted marketing in authentic way. So he introduced me with a video. Minis, I go online and I share my knowledge and wisdom. So I do online training. I do online webinars. I teach people and by going in a Facebook, in LinkedIn, because there is my audience, because LinkedIn is the people who, or my audience actually is there. So I share, I write every single month one article. I am just finishing up to send for publishing my book, which is my motto also, fail and get up and never give up. So it's the most authentic way to share the wisdom and what makes a person have to be high achiever without burning out, and how to be resilient as a leader. That is the most important quality of 21st century leader, because we live in a VUCA world. I mean, it's volatile, yes? Unpredictable.
You said, right.
Yes.
Chaotic.
And then if you don't have resilience, then you get burnout. Then you fail as a business, because many businesses and many successful people, they fail, but they see that failure as a stepstone to the next step, to come to the conclusion for better outcome. That is the high achievers, the most important tool as a leader, to be a resilient. And in that book, I finished, it's fail and get up and never give up. Meaning resilience is, and persistence is the biggest attitude and taking in that book, and how the compassion as a person, as a, and the people around me that can build that high performance. As a, because as you mentioned in your advertise that you put it in a radio, is that high what you call entrepreneurs. Is a lot in a business, can be frustrating in a business, right? Because it's time consuming, you need to learn new things, you need to have, in many cases, it's very hard, right? Because as an entrepreneur, as a leaders today, a lot in a plate, right? And to come to that understanding that what is the most important, because also I am a success principal trainer from Canfield methodology. So as a high achiever, I do five things every day until it's finished. So I use success principles to be high achiever without burning out.
Very good. Well, what's the name of your book once again?
My book is Fail and Get Up and Never Give Up.
Very good. Now, and you just completed the book?
I just completed, and I am about to send it for publication.
Okay, great. Well, congratulations.
Thank you very much.
You're welcome. One question. In your book, do you share your greatest failure?
Yes.
Do you talk about that? So do you mind sharing that here on the show? We're going to get an exclusive from you, right? So this is only in the book, right?
Yes. Only in the book. Yes. It's the first time I am sharing.
Perfect. This would be perfect. Great.
Yes. You see, all of us, you, me, and every single human in this world, We are born in different environment, family environment, city environment, country environment, right? And me as a person, I born in communism time. And the part of environment when I was, because somebody can have a blind spot to another. See, for me, it was that I was 7-8 years old. And my oldest sister, because we are five sisters. My father wanted boy, but he couldn't. So we was
five girls and, yes. And one father, right? Wow, six
yes.
women and one man. Wow.
Yes.
Okay.
And he was a lucky man because when he come from work, one take care of his head, another his shoes, another his clothes. So he was a king, right? And what I am saying is that in that time, my sister, it was like 10 years older than me, my oldest one. And because we was under communism dictator and my family suffered a lot. They killed 27 people because we was not communist. And they take all our property.
You lost 27 people in your family?
Yeah. And the only reason my father, they didn't kill him is because he saved the life of prime minister of a communist country in a second war in Honduras. So he saved my father's life after that, right? So in being in that kind of environment, which no, it was everyday life, you have no right for anything, meaning no job, no school, and no to marry. So my sister, it was 18, 19 years old, and she applied to be a dentist, doctor. And the government, they take off her from the list, and they put another communist people over there. And then she was in love with another guy, which it was perfect match with her. They both was very happy. And they don't let them to marry because she is not a communist. So looking my sister, 7-8 years old, crying every day for the school and for the love of her life, and look at her like that, the 7 years old girl decided that not me, that I cannot bear, I cannot allow that to happen to my life. And that was decision I make. I was 7.
Okay.
So I grew up, I go to school, communism finished, people because I fight 17 men and me, we fight for first election in the city, we win, democratic win, and people vote and they make me attorney of the city for 4 years. And after that, of course, I finished law school and I come in United States and I work. And of course, you met a lot of people. Here is free country. And what happened is one day I see a beautiful soul. And of course, I am human too, right? And every time we try to meet, I bump from the fear or something that prevents me to say yes or to involve with other person, even in conversation. I can speak with every man in the earth, but not with that person. So in that case, I put a wall in myself that no, it was the fear that it was in my mind and in my heart, and the trust, I couldn't trust. So those two, a 7 years old, decided, and that it was in every relationship that I tried to build. And that makes me to go deep in myself and to see what really, and I have the best mentor in the world. Don't try that at home. Is you need to find really trusted person to see what you don't see, because a coach or a good mentor can see what you don't see. And I was given the second chance to build myself up from the ground zero. So I am grateful for the rest of my life to my mentor and my hero, Mr. Jack Canfield.
Wow. So you're an event that happened when you were seven, and it didn't even happen to you. It happened to your sister.
Yeah.
Affected how you related to other people.
Yeah.
And you closed yourself off. And
yes. I denied myself.
Was, right. Even though there was a man, I think, you wanted to engage, you know, speak
yes.
to him, but you
Very
closed
much.
Yourself off. You couldn't. So it's amazing how, and I think people don't realize how events that happen to them, even as young as, you know, 5 or 7 years old, can affect them for the rest of their life. And
yes.
they won't, it's one of those things you don't know that
mm-hmm.
the 5-year-old or seven, in your case, 7-year-old is still running your life. And I assume,
yes.
Lori, you must see this, Lori, you see this a lot.
Yes, I am coaching people now, and what I see in the people I'm coaching is that exactly blind spot they have, and I am so passionate to help them because I see myself in them.
Interesting. Lori? Oh, did we lose Lori?
Yeah,
okay.
Sorry. I hit the
so
mute.
You, oh, that's
I was
all
answering,
right.
but you didn't
okay.
hear me.
You were right. I was saying you must see this a lot in your work. So there's some overlap.
Yes, there's definitely a lot of overlap, and how, you know, things affect you when you're younger that you don't realize, and it plays into your adult life until you really stop to kind of explore it, or, you know, use different resources to get to what's underneath.
Yeah.
So you don't know what you don't know until you know it.
Yes.
Right.
Exactly. So, and that's useful
so
too.
Sorry, go ahead. Go ahead, Laura. Keep going.
No, I was going to say that, I mean, that's very useful in transformation. And I would imagine, you know, for Desi, that's primarily what you do.
Yes, indeed. Because I don't want anybody to suffer. And because of the blind spots, thank God we live in open society, which give the second chance to the people that they can learn from their mistakes. They can learn their blind spots. They can learn the new things that they can prevent that from happening in a deep level. And that's why I'm so passionate to help people from preventing this blind spot. And I am developing an online program for 8 weeks that I can help anybody who I cannot meet in person in digital world, right?
Okay.
Oh, that's awesome. Now, do you think that that premise, right, you don't know what you don't know and you're helping them, do you think that helps in preventing burnout or in helping someone cope with burnout?
Yes, indeed. And the methodology that, because I study 6 different coaching methodologies, because I'm high achiever from Columbia University, I don't go for mediocre, for sure. I don't know you guys know the work or Arthur Kramazi. He's extremely developed one of the top 10 of the coach and consultant in the world. And he explored how everybody's brain work. And when I took my test, it was that I have a purple brain, meaning the purple brain, there are 4 kinds, it's green, red, blue, and purple. Mine, it was purple. So the purple brain is that it's not enough for the purple brain to learn one coaching methodology. No, need to learn 1, 2, 3, 4, 5. And when the problem comes, if one method doesn't work, another one, and another one, and another one. And that's who I was. I found out in the end of my training career. So it was amazing when I find out, and I encourage everyone to take that test, because develop good relationship at work. because sometimes a person who have a green brain means he approaches things fast, he make mistakes, and the purple brain go, oh, what we are doing? That you are not good. And then come to the person or the group of the team, disengagement or fight or flight mode. So it's amazing how I put all the methodologies in my coaching and consulting methodologies. So if for some executive or company doesn't work this kind, because depend of the culture of the company, right? And depend of the of business the company is doing. And I use a different approach now. That's how I call myself authority in the field.
So you said everyone should take this test. Is it something you can get online?
Yes, indeed. I can share with you or send you the link, and you can go ahead and do it. It's free.
Oh,
he's
that
very
would be
generous.
Great. And then I'll post it. Ted and I will post it on Facebook, and anyone who wants can take the test and see what kind of brain they have.
Yes, indeed.
Desi, if someone wants to get in contact with you, Desi, how would they do that?
Well, I have my website, which is desitahirai.com, and I also, my phone number is 201-951-1178, and my email address is my last name, tahirai.desi@gmail.com. So my website, you have, you can book a call, a free 40-minute session with me in any problem you have. So it's easy to contact. I am all the time in LinkedIn and Facebook. So I am a digital person.
Okay. So what final words of wisdom?
Go ahead, Lori.
That's it. That's what I was going to ask. Just final words of wisdom.
Yes. And my word of wisdom is, and what I find out from all this learning and training, and I am involved with the Columbia University Toastmasters, is if you want to be a good speaker and if you want to be a good leader, to have communication style that you need as a development. For I am talking about for new generation of leaders that need that kind of development in leadership and in what you call communication. Columbia University Toastmaster Group is the best place to be. I was like a chicken before. I was going after the table, behind the chair, because I was shy to speak. And many colors in my face, you name it. By going there every day, the website and the resources you have and the people to help you is incredible. I mean, it's nowhere in earth you can find that, in my opinion. So if you guys need the help for public speaking, leadership, and communication development, go to Columbia University Toastmasters website and or contact me that I can help you to register. It's almost free.
Yeah, almost Toastmasters free. Is a great program.
Okay.
So I was just going to say that your enthusiasm has been a blessing and appreciated, and it's been great having you on as a guest.
Oh, thank you, Lori, very much. I really appreciate you guys, and I want to leave you with one thing. Learn from everyone. In the same time, it's very important to be you.
Yes. Thank you very much.
Very good.
You're welcome.
Thank you for those words.
Thank you for having me, and reach me out if you have any question or anything in between.
Will do. Thank you,
Thanks for joining us, Desi.
Thank you,
everyone who listened, and everyone have a great evening.
And tune in. We'll see you next Thursday.
You got it.
Bye.
Bye.